5-0. Moved by Councilor Keckin, second by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into regular open session of Council at
6:33 p.m.
Call the question. All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. Is she participating now?
Who?
Debbie?
Yes.
So we need to record a vote for everything then.
Yeah. Debbie, are you able to unmute?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Councilor
Roland Haskin? What was the question?
Recorded vote?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Hekkonen?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zula?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. That's carried. 5 yeas, no nays. Resolution 25-401, moved by Councilor Ryland, second by Councilor Haskell. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held September the 16th, 2025. All questions?
For Councilor Ryland Haskell?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Hekkonen?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zulak?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. Carry 5 yeas, no nays. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. Honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they've carried for thousands of years. We pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit to work towards truth and reconciliation. Back into open session, so I'll ask for the roll call once again.
Councillor Morley Haskell.
Councillor Debbie Zula.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Mike Hekkonen.
Park Administrator Carly Britton.
Mayor David Moore. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. And resolution 25-402, moved by Councilor Ryland, second by Councilor Keckinen. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby moved into a public meeting at
6:35 p.m.
to consider the following matter: 70 Burnett's Road, Moffitt, zoning bylaw amendment and rezoning. Question. All those have to do the report.
Councilor Morley Haskell?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Hekkonen?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zula?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. 5 yeas, no nays, so it's carried. Well, who do we have from Planscape?
We do have Ryan Lloyd from Planscape on Zoom. If you're able to provide us with a bit of a summary of the application, Ryan?
Sure. Good evening, Council, and through you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Ryan Lloyd. I'm with Planscape, and as you know, working with your staff since April, May of this year. I think a fairly straightforward application tonight, but I'll give you a brief summary, and I'm happy to take any questions. So an application to amend the zoning bylaw was submitted June 3rd, 2025, for Christopher Moffitt to rezone two lots from Waterfront Residential 2 to Inland Development 1, or the RU Zone. The purpose of today's application is to fulfill one of the conditions of the approved consent application number B05-2025 McKellar in the name of Moffitt. The Parry Sound Area Planning Board approved the consent application on April 8, 2024. The application included a lot addition to a benefiting waterfront lot and resulted in the creation of one new severed lot and one retained lot. During the policy review of the application, it was determined that the subject lands were incorrectly zoned Waterfront Residential 2, having no frontage or access to the waterfront. A survey was provided to the Planning Board indicating the resulting retained lot would be approximately 12 meters from the lake at its closest point. The official plan appropriately designates the lands as rural area on Schedule A. The official plan also considers waterfront backlot development, and without a functional relationship to the waterfront, the official plan considers this as rural area. The zoning bylaw amendment is consistent with the 2024 planning provincial planning statement, the Northern Growth Plan, and conforms to the township's official plan. The Inland Development 1 or REU zone is an appropriate zone for the subject's lands, and in my professional opinion, is good planning and in the public interest. Thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Excellent, thank you. Any questions from council? And it is a public meeting, so I'll ask the public as well, anybody on Zoom or anybody in person, any questions on this particular rezoning? Okay, thank you. I think we deal with it later on in the agenda, so that's probably all we need at this point. No questions, and thank you for the detailed explanation.
Thank you.
We have resolution 25-403, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into regular session at
6:38 p.m. Councilor Morley Haskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Kekkonen?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zulak?
Yes. I didn't hear the question, but yes.
Just ending the public meeting. Mayor David Warren?
Yes. That's 5 yeas, no nays, so that's carried. On to delegations presentations. We have resolution 25-404, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from Gordon Lane from helping out here in the Badgeton search and rescue, ground search and rescue for information purposes. If that's a mispronunciation, and it certainly could be, let me know how it's said.
I'd be the first person to get it on the first try.
Oh, okay.
That was my introduction. I'm in now.
You're in.
Okay.
We have a slideshow, do we?
Absolutely, we do, yeah.
Okay.
So thank you, Your Worship, and councillors and staff for giving me some time to introduce the Manchu Search and Rescue Team to you tonight. I do often get questions, how do you say that? How do you say the Manchu? And my answer is always, well, this is how I say it. I'm not a native person, so I may not be pronouncing it quite right. So I think we all just do our best with these names. I wonder if we could just go back to the first slide to make sure everybody sees our lovely logo, and now that you've seen it, we can go on to this slide. I'm going to talk more about that logo later, so I'm glad you saw it. So the first thing I want to do is just give you a brief summary of the sort of the infrastructure of search and rescue within Canada. So there's a few acronyms to get to know, the first one being SAR, being Search and Rescue, easy. The next one on the side is SARVAC. SARVAC is the federal volunteer group that liaises with the federal government on search and rescue issues. And then on SARVAC, it stands for Search and Rescue Volunteer Association of Canada. And the next one, OSARVA, is the Ontario Search and Rescue Volunteer Association. This is a provincial volunteer group which liaises with the provincial government and also with all the provincial search and rescue teams. And then I'm going down, drilling down into the district level now, from federal to provincial and the district level, we now have the Manchetoon Search and Rescue Team serving the entire Parry Sound District, east and west side. Next slide, please. So I'm gonna start with what our primary role is, and I put an acronym on the screen, GSAR, which we're often sometimes referred to, just to specify that we are, in fact, a ground search and rescue team, as opposed to on water. I won't say more about that. But what I'm going to do now is going to have a bit of fun, and I'm going to have a scenario for you that is extremely simplified, so it only takes a couple of minutes. So here's the scenario, and I'd like to try to pay attention, because there will be a quiz at the end of the scenario. Okay, so here it is. So Diego goes for a walk. A little while later, Dora notices that Diego has not returned, and she gets worried. So she calls 911 to report a missing person. At that point, the OPD are activated, and they start to investigate the report that Dora has made. Let's go to the next slide. So far, Matching's not involved. The OPP is now investigating what could be known about Diego. So the next thing is, if they determine that there's a likely location in which Diego may be found, number one. Number two, if the OPP is limited in resources available for doing a search, you know, because the OPP actually can do a search on their own. They don't need a local volunteer search and rescue team at times. So if they can do it themselves, they'll do it themselves. Of course, the OPP has many other functions, so they might be busy doing other things. So they have limited resources. Number three, if the OPP also deems that the search would not be hazardous to volunteer searchers, then finally they would activate the local search and rescue team, in our case, in the Desperate Preparedness Sign Expert Match Team. So, and you're wondering what would be dangerous about doing a search? Well, sometimes when people go missing, there are criminal elements involved. And they're not, the OPP would not want to put more people at risk, of course. Let's go to the next slide. So at this point, if those three things are true, and you know what, I don't represent the OPP here, so I don't want you to think that I've said everything that the OPP does in the background, but these are the things that I presume is happening. There's probably much more going on as well. So finally, they in this case, they activate us. And we search always under the direction, sometimes shoulder to shoulder with the OPP. And sometimes we are not shoulder to shoulder with the OPP if they are really not available to do the search. They will just put us on our own to do a search. But they always give us clear instructions on where we're going, what we're looking for. And we're always in constant communication with them in return as to what's going on and what we're finding. Let's check the next slide. Oh, here's the quiz. So when Dora is worried enough to want to report a missing person, the quiz is, choose one of these four. She should do what? She should call today's presenter, that'd be me. I represent the Match Team. She could look me up and she could call me. Maybe she knows me personally. Or B, would she look up the Match Team's website and contact them that way? Or C, does she call the OPP? Or finally, D, does she call 911? And hopefully notice Dora did the right thing in my scenario. She called 911. That is the right answer. She does not call us directly. She does not even call the OPP directly. She'll be better served by calling 911 in this case. Let's go to the next slide. We don't need to spend much time here, but we do have a website, which is, at this point in time, it's not simply, actually working out fine. We don't have, you know, www.matchtune.com. Which might be easy, but then again, it might be hard, because who knows how to spell the Match Tune. Instead, we have to save money, we have a Google site, so I don't even know what the address is, but if you actually Google the Match Tune Search and Rescue, or scan that QR code, you'll find our website. Let's go to the next. A bit of history now about search and rescue in our district. Prior to 2021-2022, there was no search and rescue team in the Parry Sound District. But in our surrounding areas, have had search and rescue teams for quite some time. I just looked up a bit of history. So to the northeast of us, there is the BayStar team, which is based out of North Bay. I don't know exactly when they were established, but I know it was prior to 1995. To the northwest, so serving Sudbury and then East Espanola, basically the north shore of Georgian Bay, we have the team called the North Shore Search and Rescue Team. They were established in 1989. And in south of us, we have Georgian Bay Volunteer Search and Rescue, which I think of them as being based on in Midland. They serve the south end of Georgian Bay, and they go east into Muskoka as well. So they've been around for a while. Prior to 2021, there was no search and rescue team in the Parry Sound District, so the OPP were left in a situation where they would do the searches on their own when they could, or I think what they would often do if they needed help is they would call a local fire department to get assistance from them. Or another thing that may have happened even before I was around, so I didn't know about it, they may have invited a surrounding team to come and help with the search. Because certainly GBVSAR is willing to come into our district to help us with the search, and before we existed, they would have been willing, I'm sure, to come into our district to help with the search. Let's go to the next slide. A bit about the origin of our team. So it all started at about in 2018, where some community members began discussions about, you know, would it be valuable to have a search and rescue team? And my understanding is, I wasn't really involved in that myself, but my understanding is quite a few of those members actually were involved in firefighting in the area, and they said, you know, we're trained structure firefighters, we're not actually trained in search and rescue, and wouldn't it be better if we had a team that was specific research and rescue. So that was when it was started, and then it got paused a bit during the pandemic, but in 2021, 2022, things got rolling again. We got incorporated. We are now a not-for-profit. We established our name and our logo. So, and that happened after consultation with local First Nation groups. So you might be wondering, where does the name of Madgetune come from? It is an Anishinaabek word, which I believe means something to the effect of to keep alive. And our logo, which is, I think, beautiful, and it was on the opening slide, was created by a First Nations artist from West Hoxton. And I'm not certain about why the decision was made to go with Madgetune Sire, but looking at it now, from my perspective, I see it as great, because if we called ourselves the Parry Sound Search and Rescue Team, people would think that we're serving Parry Sound, the town of Parry Sound, the district is so much more than the town of Parry Sound. So, also in 2021-22, we started getting our members trained under BSAR and SAR 1. BSAR is what we use primarily now. And what I want you to know about BSAR is it is a training program for search and rescue teams that is used all across Ontario. And it was designed in consultation with the OPP. The OPP said, look, this is what we want search and rescue people to be able to do, to know about. So now they have confidence that if they call a search and rescue team anywhere in Ontario, they're getting BSAR trained members that know how to properly integrate with the operations of the OPP. We also became members in Osarva and Saravac in that area, 2021-22, and we established insurance, and we were able to start acquiring equipment then as well. Let's go to the next slide. So you might be wondering, what have we done? And I'm actually quite surprised looking back at how much activity our team has done in the past, just, I guess, about 3 years. We've assisted the OPP in one search in Parry Sound, two searches in Carling, one search in Sunridge. We, just this winter, we were called to respond to a search in Manawan, but we were stood down before we got to the site. This is a situation that, like, the best outcome was before we even got there, the subject was found, so that was great. And then we've been put on call to assist in mutual aid with other search teams in the province, which is something that is not uncommon, of course. We work together and we'll help them when needed. So there was once that we were asked to go out to the Timmins area and once in the scope area to help other teams and searches. Now it gets more interesting, because we are not just a search and rescue team, we are more than search and rescue. So new just in the past year or maybe year and a half, Emergency Management Ontario is partnering more and more with OSARVA to use search and rescue assets during emergencies. Because we have that training that was directed by the OPP, they realized, well, here's a labor force that can be useful and do things even more than just search for a missing person. So for example, the Orillia ice storm just this past winter, our team was actually involved in that. Orillia not being in the Parry Sound district, but it was a big enough event that they brought in teams from surrounding districts as well to help out. And then Starvac, remember that's the federal group, Search and Rescue Volunteer Association of Canada. They coordinate ground search and rescue teams that will help in response to national emergencies or regional emergencies that are so big, right? So, and that's under what's another acronym is HWF, which stands for the Humanitarian Workforce. That's the federal group that will help them in the case of an emergency. So we've been invited to help out. Back during the pandemic, there was a problem in the Port Hope, which is a Northern Ontario community that needed help because it was so impacted by the pandemic for a while. We were invited, not previous to this year, to help out with fire evacuations in Labrador and to help out with, I think it was evacuations as well, because of the flooding in BC. And then just this summer, we were invited to respond to Manitoba to help out with the fire evacuations and also Newfoundland. And our team actually did respond to those too. We had a member go to Manitoba to help out at the evacuation center in Winnipeg. And we had a member go to Newfoundland to help out as well. In that case, he was involved, I think, more sort of in security around sites that were unstable post-fire. He wasn't put into a situation where he was fighting a fire, but he was sort of doing traffic control in areas that were closed because it had recently been severely affected by the fires. So you might be wondering, you know, if you're not searching for people, what are you? And, well, interestingly, our member that was in Winnipeg helping out in the Evacuation Center was there primarily just to guide people on finding out what people need and help them get what they need when they're in the Evacuation Center. There were some 3,000 people in some sort of large community center sleeping on cots for a while. But he was actually involved in, I think, more than one search within the Evacuation Center. 3,000 people in an unfamiliar site, 9 or 10 o'clock, the lights go out, and then people realize, my kid's missing. So there were some searches happening in the Evacuation Center. But in addition to that, because of our VSAR training, we can help out with site management, incident command, first aid, operational communications, wellness checks, logistics support, security and traffic management, or even just general labor. We could be packing sandbags. I want to talk to you about funding because I don't know if you have heard the news reports that I heard. I, of course, pay attention now that I'm involved in this to search and rescue news reports. And I found this summer when they were talking about the unfortunate case in Nova Scotia, two young children went missing. They're still missing. So because it went on for so long, there was lots of media reports about it. And one of the media reports I heard on CBC discussed some of the funding of the search and rescue teams that were involved. And Nova Scotia does offer some provincial funding on a regular basis to their teams, which got me wondering, well, how are we funded? We have no provincial funding in Ontario, with really one new exception. I mentioned the EMO, how EMO may use us in the case of an emergency. And the nice thing is, if we are activated by EMO, they will reimburse us for our expenses incurred during that activity, which is very nice. Other than that, there's no direct provincial funding. And we have no federal support. However, if we're activated and going on a humanitarian workforce situation, you know, our members did not pay to fly to Newfoundland. That was all organized. So his expenses were covered while they were traveling. But we do not have funding from any government sources for our operational costs. So what we do is we do fundraisers. We've been doing an annual polar dip, Mount Carlin, which I invite you to this winter. I'm sure it'll happen. I've done it myself, and it's uncomfortable, but it's worthwhile. It's exhilarating when you're finally out of the water. And then we depend on donations. We'll be doing, hopefully, we're organizing our fall boot drive, but for quite a few years we've been doing a spring and a fall boot drive as well. And we've been involved in things like pancake breakfasts, whatever we can think of, really. We're trying to add more and more ways to raise money. And grant money is sometimes available. We haven't had direct success, our team, yet with grants, but we're continuing to look for grants and applying for grants. But OSARVA actually does help with grants. So OSARVA gets provincial or federal grants that then they would share with all the provincial teams. So we're benefiting from grants that way as well. Let's go to the next slide. So what expenses do we have, you might be wondering. Since you guys run a township, you probably are aware of dollars and cents and how things have to budget, how to have balance, things have to balance. So what expenses do we have? We have our things like the OSARVA annual membership, we have equipment maintenance, just simple things like we have to buy new batteries for our GPSs on occasion. We have insurance, and our insurance expense actually went up a little bit this year because we were very fortunate in that we were able to acquire a truck for our team. Prior to this year, we had a trailer that we could put our equipment in to then move to a site. Like when we went to Sunridge for our search, we had to maybe take some equipment with us. But we didn't have a truck to pull it with, so we were depending on our members that might have a vehicle large enough to pull the trailer. This year, we acquired a 2012 Sierra, which is old, so it required a bit of work, but it's in top shape right now. But of course, that adds to our insurance expenses. Having a truck. We're looking at additional equipment purchases all the time. If we can get more equipment, then our team becomes even more useful. It'd be nice if we could uniform our team, like if we had jackets so people would recognize that we're a team. We do have some uniforms now, but we've acquired them from our members buying it, and then, you know, 10% extra goes to the team. So our own members are helping fund the team that way. when we do trainings, we might actually burn up some of our, not burn up, use up some of our first aid equipment, and that needs to be replenished. And many first aid things simply expire over time, so we need to replenish that. If we get involved in a long-term search, like longer than 6 hours, and searches could go on for, well, the one in Manganawan, we didn't really get there, and it was already over. The search that we were in over in Sunridge, it went on for like 3 days, maybe 4 days. So if it goes on more than 6 hours, we're going to start thinking about feeding our team. So all those small things in this year's budget add up to about $10,000 a year, which I suppose if you're thinking of your actual budget, that's small. But for our completely volunteer team, that's a lot of money. And back to the logo, it's so beautiful, I thought I'd show you that again. But that brings me to the end of the presentation, except for one thing, which I've done other presentations to other groups, such as other councils, and I find everyone always has one question, which I didn't include in the presentation. I think of it at the end, and that is, how many members do you have? So members come and go, but I looked at our app that we use to keep track of who's on call, who's not on call, and just did a count, and I think I came to 32. But I think our current number might be 32. Might seem right, probably. And it seems to range, you know, because members come and go, people go off to school, or they move, and then they move back. We seem to be steady between 30 and 40 over the past couple of years of active searchers. And then some of our members actually aren't BSAR trained. They want to be involved, but they can't imagine being involved in a search. So we have people like, thank goodness, we have a treasurer who volunteers to be our treasurer, but isn't a searcher. But that's great, because we need a treasurer, and I think he's actually a certified accountant. So lucky to have all these members. Now, I think I've used up all my time. Yeah.
Any questions, though?
Yeah, can I take any questions?
Great, any questions from council?
Hey, Gordon, about how many hours would a person have to put in to be trained to join your team?
Sounds like maybe you're interested in joining, which is wonderful. We're always recruiting. we have basically monthly trainings, which tend to be usually like a 6 hour long training every month. But we only run the BSAR course generally once a month. So new members, did have a member join. Well, we've had people join this summer, and they're members, but they haven't done BSAR yet, so they're not actually a searcher. So they won't be deployed on a search, and they won't be deployed on an EMO event, and they won't be deployed to the management workforce event. But they're part of our team, and they're training with us. And then that once a year, we would do the BSAR course, which would run, I think it's about a 12-hour course. It'll be like Friday night, and then all day Saturday. And then you're training, ready to go. But then stay actively a member. Our team has requirements on how many trainings, how many hours you need to be involved in. Our exercises throughout the year as well to maintain your good status. And then you need to recertify annually your visa. Recertification being much shorter, it may only be a 4-hour recertification.
Okay, thanks.
You've already mentioned the insurance liability. I'd always be concerned about that if you're out and something happens to one of the searchers.
Mm-hmm.
Do they go into your personal insurance, or does this group have insurance coverage for anything that might happen?
Yeah, you know, our membership with Starvac and Starvac, I think it's actually the Starvac card, gives us access to insurance, which is like the same program that I think all the search teams probably use across the province, maybe in the country. Although it might be different in BC, because searches in BC sometimes involve helicopters. And they're more exciting up there. But the insurance is through the team, not through your personal insurance. And it becomes active when we are activated by the OPP, for example. So I mentioned earlier that Dora should not call us directly to do a search, because if we were to go out and help Dora find Diego, we're not insured. But if the proper processes are followed and OPP activates us, our insurance is now covering us for things like if we get injured or if someone accuses us of, you know, doing something on their private property that maybe.
So when you actually find someone, again, it's just sort of a hold until the OPP arrives, or can you transport it? Or?
know, our, depends on where we find them, but generally it's going to be, we're going to take them to where EMS can access them. So you can imagine if we're out searching for a hunter that got injured and he's 3 kilometers out in the bush somewhere, EMS is not coming in. So we are expecting that patient to the roadside.
It's interesting because even in our fire department, I think when they do help the first aid calls, they can't transport, right? They just have to help the people on site. So it's interesting that you're able to actually move people and transport them to another location. Yeah.
It's actually even, that's actually something that we are working on, maybe expanding things that we do to be even more involved in that, because I have an understanding that EMS is less and less willing to go to certain locations, like off-road. EMS may not be willing to go across a lake or down a forest trail. So, actually, I thought maybe that they might be calling the fire department to do that, but we would absolutely extract a patient. We don't want to move an injured patient, but if that's the only option, that's what we're gonna do. And we do have radios, and we will be in communication. So when we find someone, of course, we're doing a full first aid assessment. Are they movable or not? Absolutely. If they need to be moved, we're going to move them. If they can't be moved, yeah.
So I'm just interested again in the liability. It's a first aid assessment sort of thing. But do you have EMS staff trained in your search and rescue? I mean, how would you determine whether the person could be moved or not if it's a back injury, for instance?
We're standard first aid. And CPR training, not beyond that. We're fortunate enough, actually, from some EMO funding, where many of our team members are going to be doing wilderness first aid training this fall, but we are not EMS people. We are, it's more like, I mean, even untrained first aiders, if they come across someone who's in need, yeah, you might make a mistake because of lack of training, but if you use the training you have and communicate where possible with people that have more training, then you're doing the right thing, you're helping, right? But yeah, we're not going to do anything, we have enough first aid training to not do anything foolish.
Yeah. Now, my concern always is, of course, that, and I think you are covered, but having the person come back later with some type of a lawsuit saying that, I'm injured now because of what you've done, and then you've got enough defense that okay, great.
We're prepared for that.
Any other questions from council? From the public, I'll open it up to the public too. Okay. Councilor Zulak, do you have any questions?
No.
Well, great. Well, thanks very much for your presentation, and we're not talking budget yet, so. I know that's sort of a little mention of that.
You figured me out.
But it does certainly look like you could use some more funding, because you talk about people using their own equipment and going to sites and that too. It'd be nice if you had actual funded equipment so that more control over it. But.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
I've read the resolution. I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Recorded.
Oh, yes, recorded again. Glad you're keeping an eye on it.
Councilor
Marley
Hoskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Kekin?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zula?
Yes.
Mayor David Ward?
Yes. That's 5 days, no days, so that's carried. To 14.1, resolution 25-405, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the September 2nd, 2025 regular meeting of the Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes?
Councillor Marley Haskin?
Yes.
Councillor Mike Kekin?
Yes.
Councillor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councillor Debbie Zula?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. 5 yeas, no nays, that's carried. 6, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the Township of McKellar Public Library Board meeting minutes for April the 28th, 2025, May 26th, 2025, and June 23rd, 2025 for information purposes. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question.
Councilor Marley Haskins?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Kekkonen?
Yes.
Councilor Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Nabizuma?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. It's 5 yeas, no nays, so that's carried. On to 16.2, resolution 25-407, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Haskins. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the Township of McKellar Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee meeting minutes for July 17th, 2025. And August 21st, 2025 draft minutes for information purposes. Discussion? Call the question.
Councilor Marley Haskins?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Kekkonen?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Nabizuma?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. It's 5 yeas, no nays, so it's carried. To 17.1, we have resolution 25-408, moved by Councilor Ryland, second by Councilor Kekkonen. The result of the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives the asset management plan as prepared and presented by Ulan Asset Management for information purposes. Discussion? Depending how much detail you want to get into, I think we have Mr. Ulan online.
Yes.
I don't know whether
you. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe just as a lead into all of this, what you went through and what you presented us with, I think we have a few questions, mainly by comparing to other asset management plans that were presented to us, I think 2016, roughly 2021. And I think what we'd be interested in knowing is what your instructions were, I guess, in preparing this plan and where you hope we can go from this point.
Sure, I can do that. Again, my name is Chad Ulan. I've been working with the municipality of the township now for the last 3 to 4 months, I guess, to develop this plan. I was brought on through the software company, Infrastructure Solutions, to help assist and get the plan completed before the for the July deadline for the regulation change. I was provided the information through the software to develop a asset management plan, and working with the township to develop all the kind of nuances and bits and pieces throughout the document. Most of the information was already supplied in the software, so a lot of the scenario information, a lot of that stuff was done through the software, and then we ended up writing kind of the content and putting all the pieces together to develop the plan. I think as far as moving forward with the plan, there's definitely more data that need to be captured in the years to come. And it's like that for every municipality at this point. It's always just to capture data to make sure that we have what's most up to date. But a lot of the information there is accurate and up to date. It's just some of the smaller bits and pieces throughout that'll need to be kind of brought closer to date than we currently are. And then some of the aspects in the buildings and facilities that can be kind of separated apart. So right now, a lot of that stuff is looked at as a whole, where we can start to look at developing that into component pieces and managing those pieces individually.
Okay, no, that makes sense. You mentioned, I think, throughout the report, too, that it meets the requirements of legislation, that we're in a situation now that I guess there was always a question that grants wouldn't even be considered unless we had an active asset management plan in place. You're saying now that it meets all the requirements of the government, so we can apply for various grants?
This document should meet all the requirements of the 5A-17 regulation in Ontario.
Yeah, well, when you say should meet, concerned?
No, yeah, like, if you go through, like, there's the the defined list that ORAG puts in place is, you got maybe kind of 6 points that need to be hit in throughout the document. All 6 of those points are addressed in the document.
Okay, great. Council, any particular questions? But I think, you know, you sort of hit on it, and maybe some members of council will comment on this as well. The generalities involved in the document. And that's why I was interested to know what your instructions were. The previous ones that we've looked at, as I said, we did take it apart into individual fleet, for instance, and buildings, and we looked at what had to be done. Quite often we read in the document that it says, like bridges, one example, one's in very poor condition, never identified, I don't think. And some of the others are, for fleet, for instance, 5 of the vehicles are in good shape, that sort of thing. It doesn't really specify. So I guess the question is, do you have that information? Did you receive that from our public works superintendent or somebody here on staff to actually detail some of those generalities that were in the report? Do you have any of that information, or is that yet to come?
No, the software itself does have all of that information included in it. Like as far as like which vehicles are at which condition, are worth what dollar amount, same as for all of the other asset classes, as far as that goes, what roads are in there, what bridges are in there, are all individually in the software. A lot of times I try to keep the very specifics out of these kind of higher level documents, mainly just to avoid confusion. So there's less about specifics and more about the general asset class, and we're looking at replacement and renewal and things like that, then we can start to dive into the actual specifics. But as far as a lot of the information that I try to provide, I try to make it more generic than talking about specific things, just to ensure that there's no confusion at the end of the day.
I can appreciate that. I guess the question is then, how do we proceed without that data to know which particular vehicles maybe need replacement or repair? If we don't have the data, you're saying it's in the software. Is that something we don't have and we have to purchase, or how does that work?
No, you have already purchased. You have access to the software. At any point in time, you would be able to go in and look and update information in the software, or inevitably, hopefully at some point, run scenarios on your own that you'd be able to develop these things kind of in the meantime. So one of the requirements for ORAG is that this asset management plan is updated online every 3 years. So over the course of the next couple of years, we'll be updating information in that plan or in that software, running new scenarios to see how we output the capital plan at the end of the day, and get ourselves to a point that we have new and fresh information over the course of the next couple of years that we can then write a new plan for 2028. And that then would show what has been accomplished in the last 3 years, as well as how that plan has changed, but based on new data, new information, and then the new outlook for the next 10 years after that. So the outlook is always 10 years, and we try to update the asset management plan every 3 years as an official document. But throughout, as the software gets utilized more, as the municipality becomes more comfortable with it, it should become a software that is something that's used maybe not daily, but as new inspections are being done, that data is being updated in the software right away. As new assets are being purchased, other assets are being taken out of service, that information is being updated in the software, so that when it comes time to start running new scenarios, that information is readily available. It also allows the operations teams to look at how they plan their long-term schedule. So especially when it comes to that kind of 3 to 5 year window, what becomes more risky versus what becomes more beneficial to the network. So the software has open-end amounts of kind of levers and dials that you can move to change the outcome. And as your organization becomes more comfortable with it, you'll be able to get to a point that you can start inputting in very customer-related stuff. So hydrants that are closer to a hospital that are more important, or paved roads that are close to a school that become higher up on a maintenance list, or higher commercial roads or heavier commercial gravel roads that are more important and need to be upgraded from a a hardened surface into an asphalt surface. These types of kind of planning decisions are going to become easier as more data is put into the system and as we all become more comfortable with how those scenarios output.
I guess the question is, which staff members have access to that data? I mean, is it something they can do now? You say they need more education, perhaps. Do we have that available right here, and can we do the inputting, or is that something we have to rely on you to do for instruction?
That might be a question for Carly, because I know that you should have access to it. You own the software, not me. So.
Okay.
Well, let's speak more about that, Chad. When we first contacted Infrastructure Solutions, we didn't purchase the software. They were using it on our behalf, so we'll connect more about that later. But to put council's concerns aside, the treasurer does have very detailed Excel spreadsheets with all of our asset classes, which Infrastructure Solutions would have used to build the DOT software database. So it's not that we are not capturing this data, it's just in a different way.
Councilor Ryan?
Can you tell me how many staff you interacted with? I mean, verbally or electronically?
With your organization, I've met with two.
Okay. And Carly is one, obviously.
Yes, Chad interacted with myself being the clerk and Rosha Quintilla being the treasurer. As Chad alluded to before, this is a very high-level document with a lot of specifics. The public works superintendent was surveyed within some forms that Chad had provided to myself and Roshan to get a better idea of the assets in his department. This high-level document is more to meet legislative requirements, and we do realize that we need to work further with our departments to create very specific asset management plans moving forward. We've discussed things such as like gravel maintenance plans and vehicle rotations and whatnot. So there's definitely more to come with this discussion. This is just the initial high-level document to ensure that we are meeting the legislative requirements to gain funding.
Okay. Is that satisfied?
Yep. Yeah.
Other questions from council? Okay, Councilor Hassan.
Yeah, not necessarily a question, more a comment. I think we have this document. I think it's we got to get more into the particulars of what improvements we need to do in the township, or not even improvements, but to maintain what we have. So I guess going forward, it could be a job for staff and council to start getting specific in certain areas, like what roads and which roads are going to be done, what year kind of thing, get plans for, and same with our buildings. If we can get some sort of projection, 5-10 years, and lay up some sort of a plan, I think that would help us, especially when it came to budgeting. So I think maybe we should try to set meetings for that purpose going forward.
And if I may as well, if you kind of go through the implementation plan in the levels of service section of the asset management plan, a lot of the activities that it talks about there are not replacing roads or replacing bridges. It's capturing data, setting up maintenance plans, looking at starting to capture information on roads and maintenance and renewal costs and all these things. That's one big gap that a lot of municipalities have and where we see that a lot of information becomes siloed in certain departments, or it becomes where one person knows about it because they're the one that deals with it and it doesn't really go much from there. A lot of the stuff in the implementation plan and the levels of service stuff is based more around how we better organize the organization to get capture the data that we need to make those types of plans like you were just saying, sir. And without that information, sometimes we can make blindsided or uninformed decisions. And that's where asset management is intended to come in, that we can set these kind of routine schedules up in place to capture information so that when decisions need to be made, we have the most up-to-date information available to us.
Councilor Brown?
Can I ask, I mean, can access to the software be provided to council members as well? I mean, not maybe just read-only access, I'm not suggesting we would be making updates to it, but it would certainly be worthwhile to look at some detail.
I would have to speak with Infrastructure Solutions on that because I apologize. I was under the understanding that MacKellar already had a license on the software. I didn't realize that it was done just through Infrastructure Solutions. So currently then you would have no direct access to the software if that is the way that it is. But I would I'd be able to talk with at least Infrastructure Solutions and be able to pull the software up on the screen and show you if you were interested to see what it's doing or how it's working or things like that. I can't see it being a problem, but I would have to ask them first.
Okay. Councillor Kagan?
Sort of on the same point as Councillor Haskin was mentioning that, you know, since we don't own this or don't have access to the software, we certainly need what was referred to in the Appendix A, schedule a list of projects that Infrastructure Solutions Incorporated produced in the report for council, and I think it was based on 2012 numbers and statistics. We need, if we don't own this or don't have access to the software, we definitely need this spreadsheet going forward. And it was a 10-year span, and it listed every municipal asset, roads, fleet, facilities, every asset that's mentioned in the current asset management plan that you put together. Thank you very much. Appreciate the work you put into it. But we definitely need that spreadsheet that was used in the first term of council that I was on. It was very useful during the budget process so we could see that we weren't just making reactive decisions, but we were trying to be proactive, and that has not been the case for a while now. So I think that we need to get back to looking at the specific data which is relevant in our decision making. So,
And the software does output a capital plan that shows kind of what the software at least shows coming projects that are due in the next 10 years based on risk and condition. That capital plan is a list of individual projects one by one, and where the municipality then takes that plan is to start to look at how they can combine these projects into light corridors, so your roads, sewers, water, all your sidewalks, all the kind of stuff gets done all at the same time. So once we have a capital plan in place that we feel comfortable with, then we can look at coordinating those projects to inevitably save money and increase network proficiency over time.
Councillor Zulak?
Yeah, I was just wondering, is there an additional cost for the software, or has that been included in our price total?
There is an additional cost for the software.
And do you know what that is?
I'd have to reconnect with Infrastructure Solutions to see what it was, because originally it was the asset management plan and the software together, so now I'd have to re-quote.
Okay. Thanks.
Now, if once we get more information about the software, if we went that route, depending on cost, of course, would you be available for instruction to staff and how to access material and how to update at that point? I'm just looking at instruction. Obviously, you'd mentioned to one counselor that you can maybe call that up and explain different things to them. Is that something you would do with staff as well? As I say, depending on future budgets and whether we purchase the software or not.
I'd be willing to look at how I can help and assist the township to move forward with their asset management planning through the development of more information in DOT. I don't work for Decision Optimization Technology or Infrastructure Solutions, so as far as extra work beyond some light touch-ups here and there, I would have to look at how we could look at working together in the future here to help consistently move this project forward.
Okay, that'd be great. Other questions from council members? Well, thanks very much for your presentation. As I say, it's very detailed, and all 119 pages of it or more.
You got the short version.
Oh, okay. And we'll have to carry on further discussions then with Infrastructure Solutions, I guess, about the software, and then maybe it'll filter back to you and what future expectations are.
Yeah, for sure. And then have a look at that plan, and also the implementation plan at the very end of the document shows a good kind of what needs to be done over the next kind of few years as far as training and development, both internally and externally, and just development of those internal processes. So all of that stuff Buell and Asset Management can assist with in the implementation of and the development of internally.
Excellent. Well, thanks again.
Okay, thank you very much.
All the questions of council for a previous resolution?
Councilor Ronnie Haskins?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Hagman?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Arnold?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zular?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. 5 years, 1 day, so carried.
So I had one more question. I know we've already had the discussion, but
I think he's gone.
No,
okay.
He's still there?
Okay.
No,
so the legislation says that the council needs to have an approved asset management plan. So this says draft on it. So is there going to be a future motion on the table where we're approving the asset management?
Yes, on the October 7th meeting, we'll have that prepared for council. This was just the first initial meeting so that you see the document, you're able to talk to Mr. Buell, and we'll have that for approval on October 7th.
Okay, thank you.
So my 20, 30, 40, 50 questions, I guess, just come in advance. And so I think that helped tonight to know that it is, let's just say, high level and very general. It's not what we're really used to, I guess. And there's some concern there. I know there's the whole idea of the purchasing of the software. So that's something we'll have to deal with, as opposed to Councillor Keckner mentioned of spreadsheets and how to do that maybe internally. But that's a future discussion, I think, on how much we're going to spend on software that we maybe could work on ourselves. Councillor Keckner?
And most likely we have that Excel spreadsheet already in our files. It just needs to be updated and maybe expanded on some of the categories that that have been added or changed throughout the years. So it's something I believe that is doable with what we currently have. And then, so you mentioned that we've got the short version, the 119-page short version. So is there another version that we're going to see that is the final version?
Yes, for the next meeting.
Okay.
Okay, going to 17.2, resolution 25-409, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Kekkonen, be it resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of Keller hereby receives the accounts payable preliminary check run report for August 2025 from Treasurer Roshan and Cantiga for information purposes. Discussion?
So page 3 of 21, it mentions incident on February 20th, 2025, One Center Road involving a damaged hydro pole, and that was $8,191.
Yes. The township's equipment damaged the pole while they were trying to avoid an oncoming car, and they backed into a hydro pole, which needed to be replaced.
Page 4, reference to courses and training for CIBC Visa, Good Roads, 1277. I guess the question, and we had them here earlier, we're not objecting to that. We asked for a report, though, from Good Roads. And the reason for the report, I think, is to help council determine whether these are worthwhile conferences to go to see what was learned and could actually put to use in the township. I think the problem comes when council doesn't receive the information, so we don't know what's being implemented, what isn't, what's learned from those courses. And I think the report, even though it might be more general, I think it'd be useful to know rather than just saying that, yes, I think they're useful, I'd like to go again. I think we need a bit more detail in the report from the public works superintendent who attended this and explaining why, what he's learned and why it's important for the township to continue to attend these conferences. And I should add a timely report, because before we know and memory tends to fade unless there were notes kept. Anything else from the accounts? Councilor Keckman?
So the Proline rental for the lift for St. Stephen's, was that in this check on the report?
Do you have the page number?
I just say, no, I can't find it. That's
it may be in the next one, depending on when it got paid.
Okay.
Nothing from Council to do, no hand up. Okay, call the question then.
Councilor Morley Haskin?
Yes.
Councilor McKenna?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Riley?
Yes.
Councilor
Debbie Zula?
Yes.
Mayor David Ford?
Yes. 5 days, no nays, it's carried. And to 17.3, resolution 25-410, moved by Councilor Keckin and second by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives the FD-2025-10. Month-end status report for July and August 2025 as reported by Fire Chief Robert Morrison for information purposes. Any discussion with that report? Call the question. All those in favor? Oh, sorry. Recorded vote.
Councilor Morley Haskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Heckenden?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Riley?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zula?
Yes.
Mayor
Jim
Moore?
Yes.
Old habits die hard.
Old habits. That's 5 days, no nays, Gary. On to 21.1. This is from our previous public meeting. We have resolution 25-411, moved by Councilor Haskell, second by Councilor Keckman. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of Township McKellar does hereby give bylaw number 2025-49, being a bylaw to amend bylaw 95-12 as amended, the zoning bylaw for the Township of McKellar with respect to lands described as part lot 32, concession 4, 42R-22609, parts 1 and 3, McKellar, 70 Burnett's Road, in the Township of McKellar, first and second reading. Further give a third reading and pass an open council the 16th day of September 2025. Discussion? Call the question.
Councilor Morley Haskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Heckenden?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Riley?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zula?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. 5 days, no nays, carried. To unfinished business, anything on that list? Wish to discuss? Add to? Delete? Councilor Keckman?
So actually maybe it should be under, just wondering if there's going to be another bylaw report in the near future.
Yes.
And public works report in the near future?
Yes.
And there's an agreement coming up with Circular Materials Ontario.
Correct.
And so I've had numerous people mention that the recycling has been directed to the household garbage. And due to the fact that that doesn't cost, like the recycling doesn't cost us, but disposing of it in household garbage is costing us, that could be looked into why that's happening.
We're working with RLG and they've provided us with a number to call in the event that our compactor bins are full and Waste Connections isn't coming out in a timely manner to call them and they will get the trucks out quicker.
Okay, thank you.
Debbie, sorry.
Oh. Councilor Zula?
Yeah, just a question. Do you think it would be beneficial if we had the bylaw officer out to a meeting and did a, you know, overview of her report?
Yes, I will invite her to attend the council meeting at which her report is on the agenda.
Okay, thanks.
Councilor Ryan?
Can I ask, Carly, I know that the asset management plan mentions it about getting VoIP phones. Would that potentially resolve the issue that we have on here from adding the greeting message?
Yes, our current phones don't have this capability. I have checked with our phone line provider, and our contracts aren't up until September of 2027.
Okay.
So it doesn't make any sense now to break our contracts, as that will incur a large penalty.
Right.
So we can't really look at anything until September 2027, but I would like to explore VoIP phones, voice over internet phones, as they have a lot more capabilities, and with fiber coming down the highway, we'll have reliable internet for them as well.
Okay, thank you.
I noticed the reference, I don't want to make any more promises of when we'll deal with the issue, but Fox Farm Road Extension Association, you've mentioned October, we're going to have more information?
Yes, so Intact Insurance did come to the township and do a ride along with the public works superintendent. We are awaiting his final report. Our solicitor has provided us with information, so we are just waiting for the insurance to provide one full embodied report to council, and we're hoping for an October meeting.
Hoping for, so no promises.
We're only waiting on one more document, so.
Okay. Anything else on that list? New business? Public notices, announcements, inquiries, reports by council members.
I have one.
Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that tomorrow at 3 o'clock is the annual information meeting for Belvedere. I would forward that, it is by Zoom, and I'll forward that to Carly. And then if anybody wanted to zoom into it, they can.
No. Was that advertised? It's the first I've heard
of
it.
No. No, and I just received something from the new CEO. And it has in there that was sent out with an attendance, requesting attendance by Roshan. And Megan Attard, I don't understand that. Do you, Carly?
No, I'm unsure why. We'll make sure that the contact info is correct with them.
Okay, so I'll forward that to you, and then you can pass it on to everybody, anyone that wants to, with the Zoom link. Or I can forward it to, and does anybody want to attend? David, do you want me to forward that to you?
That'd be great. I can't guarantee anything, but it'd be nice to have the Zoom link.
Yeah. Okay, I'll send it to everybody, and then you can decide.
I think there's another one coming up from the health unit, the health services. I sent that out to everybody too.
Yeah.
That's later in the month. Yeah. Any other comments, Councilor Cuckin?
Just a reminder that this Saturday, September 20th, between 1:30 and 3:30 is an open house at St. Stephen's for anyone that missed the grand reopening. We'll have some entertainment and just allow people to socialize and just get familiar with the space and let them feel welcome to use it for future events. So everyone's welcome.
Is the washroom still available? Is it still there?
We've got plan A and plan B in the works.
And what type of entertainment are you performing? Is it?
Well, I thought you were doing stand-up comedy that day.
Oh, okay.
Thought maybe you could sing a couple tunes.
Well, we can do our O Canada for starters.
Okay, any other committee reports? No? Resolution 25-412, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Cuckin, be resolved Council of the Corporation Township of McKellar is hereby received the consent agenda as presented. Any wish to pull from that to discuss?
Yes.
Councilman Kekadon?
Yes.
Councilman McRylan?
Yes.
Councilman Debbie Zula?
Yes.
Mayor David Bourne?
Yes. 5 yeas, no nays, carried. On to item 26, question, comment, period related to items on the agenda. Anybody in person or on Zoom? Yes, got the microphone right.
Good evening, Lawrence Rubin. Thank you, staff, council, everyone, for you. I noticed an observation, the difference in the recorded vote. Is that just a change in process? Every vote was a recorded vote?
It's in our procedural bylaw when somebody attends by Zoom. So it's already in there.
Yeah, okay, no, good. Just, thank you.
Yeah.
I have some questions around the asset management plan and process around that. Understanding that it is a requirement from the regulations to have something in place. Understand a little bit now there's some mandatory requirements around support for potential future funding.
Right.
But I think the intent is it's more than a tick the box exercise. Because I think there's some value and use the municipality can get from an asset management plan. And I think there's a requirement to include discussion on the asset management plan as part of the budgeting process, but I may not be 100% accurate there. In 2002, 3 years ago, 22, pardon me, there, 3 years ago, an asset management plan, I guess the second phase of them, was presented to council. It wouldn't have been this council, it would have been the previous council. So my question is really, how does that plan get operationalized? And some of these questions may be better now that I know that there's another meeting in October to discuss this, although I'm not sure I may be present for that. Because there was lots of recommendations, both in the 2022 plan and the 2025 plan, even the high-level one, I imagine there's more. How does council move to decide whether or not they want to enforce or implement any of those recommendations? What's the governance or guidance given to staff to make sure that happens? In the 2022 plan, there were comments around the GIS system and tracking for the assets. Don't know if that ever got implemented. Don't know if staff was asked to implement that. There was items around funding for capital reserves and recommendations on what council should do for that. Don't know if that was given to staff to do. I'm just curious how this whole thing gets operationalized such that the activity provides some other value than just allowing for funding.
Yeah, well, it is, as you say, turned over, and that's why we had to find out ourselves who this person actually contacted. Because as far as filling in the details, it's something that would go to the public works superintendent, it would go to the treasurer, it would go to the clerk, and various people involved in it. And the recommendation, this is what would come up, as you say, at budget time. That's when it would be all discussed, and what can we afford, what can't we afford, and how to put money away into reserves if we don't need it right away. And all of that would be tied in. And it's what bothered me, I guess, a little bit about the whole process is that this was again forced on us years and years back, the Public Sector Accounting Board, et cetera, and to do the asset management plans. And they wanted to look at the lifetime cycle of the actual material that you had, the assets. And we had one done, as I said, in the around 2016, I think Councillor Kekadon referred to 2012, 2021, and now we're having another one done. And it is supposed to be for a 10-year period, and yet they want it updated every 2-3 years. And all we can do is turn it over to staff to say these are the recommendations, and you do the input, you keep it active. You're the one that has to know, for instance. They might recommend a certain road or a certain bridge, I'll stick that as an example, needs reconstruction, where we rely on the bridge inspections every 2 years as well as the asset management plan. The bridge inspection is probably more detailed in certain areas. And then we rely on the staff to actually come back to council and say, this is a priority for us. They're the ones that have to determine. And we can't sit here and just say that, no, that road doesn't need done right now. We rely more on staff. And I think what happens sometimes, I just think in past experiences, not going back a decade, a lot of it is campaigning from certain people in certain areas. It's not just getting information to council. Sometimes it turns into, this is where we need this road needs repair. And we have to look at it in the whole, the big picture. Is it a priority for us in the whole township, in the whole scheme of things? And the people in there, yes, obviously it's a priority for them, but it might not be, you know, for this year. It might be put off for another year. So again, we just make it short. We keep it up to put it up to staff an awful lot to tell us they're the ones who are aware of what's going on in the community. Hopefully the Public Works is doing patrolling throughout the township and telling us what needs to be done. We try to set up, it hasn't worked this year, but actual trips by council with the Public Works to see the roads and to see the buildings, to investigate. We used to do that, and I think it'd be a useful thing to get back into. Not that we're trying to do the work for them, but to know what they're talking about. Rather than, as I think Councillor Kekkonen said before, you don't want an emergency situation where suddenly you have to repair a culvert. If we knew about it beforehand that it's giving out and it needs this work, it's nice if council is part of that so that we're aware of it. But we do rely an awful lot on staff and the input that they give us in budget time. So.
Okay. I said the value that I see is really the long-term planning and budgeting to finance and support that. And I didn't, from my observations, and I wasn't at all the budget meetings, didn't sense that the asset venture plan was referred to by staff as part of that process. I wasn't involved, so I can't comment whether it factually was or not. But from an authorization perspective, I don't recall anything being referred to the current asset venture plan during the budget process. So I would just take that there's, you know, both in the 2022 version that was posted on your website and this version, there's a lot of detail around how the municipality should consider financing future works that may be required. It's consulted. Staff should obviously review and make their own recommendations to council. But I just, I'll observe and see what the discussion is in the October meeting. Because my concern originally here was that the report was only accepted for information purposes, which means nothing, right? It doesn't go anywhere. There's no guidance to staff as a result of that. It's just a report that's been received. So I'll wait to see what comes out of the October meeting that I'll be able to attend.
I think you can appreciate as well that we were expecting a bit more detail than what we received.
Yep.
And so it's hard to act on rhetoric and a lot of things repeated.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that are in there, yes, we will follow up on because they reiterated throughout the report. And that's information that must have been received from certain people on staff. Otherwise, they wouldn't know about those particular things. And as far as the other report, 2021, there are references, if you go through. Herber Road is a good example, and Center Road. They're actually delineated, they're marked out, and what has to be done. And so we do rely, as I say, roads in particular, on the road superintendent looking at what has to be done. Hardy's Road is in the report, the previous one, and it's being looked at. So we do follow through the asset management. It may not be able to go through in line by line and say here and here, but the staff is involved in looking at the recommendations in the report, actually adding a lot of the information to the report, and then giving it back to the council. So that is part of the budget discussion, even though we don't call it the asset management plan as such. The recommendations in there, you can track them, do come through in the budget discussions. Like otherwise, it's either looking at the road and know that it needs repairs within a certain time, or just relying on the Public Works to bring that forward, or the Public Works superintendent putting that into the report, into the asset management. It is a live document, so it'll be changing regularly, we hope. And then, but this, I think you have to go back to the 2021, the one by Burnside, mm-hmm. and that's more detailed. And the best one we've found, I think, that Councillor Kekkonen refers to back, Infrastructure Solutions. They just didn't work out this time with us, unfortunately. I don't know what happened. Because they had a really good one for spreadsheets and what should be done. And that was for a 10-year, that brought us up to 2025, roughly. And so it gets a little sketchy the further you get away, you know, year 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But they are useful, and I think, as you said, we'll try to use that. We have in the past, but maybe more detail to make actual cross-references so it's actually delineated, somebody can actually see where is that in the report, rather than just talk about the project.
Okay. No, Thank you. I will look forward to future discussions in the October meeting.
Yeah.
My thoughts, again, don't know your proposal, but that staff would provide a report to council based off of the consultant's report,
yes,
with their specific recommendations for council to review and approve.
Yeah. Well, as I say, for the herd gopher, that's been a part of the five-year plan. That was done 2-3 years ago. And so the herd gopher road reconstruction is not something we just decided to do.
No.
It was something that needed done.
Yeah.
And it was realized a few years back. So.
No, I said, to me, the identification of infrastructure improvements is the easy work.
Mm-hmm.
Financing it,
okay,
in this day and age, is the hard part, right? That's where the long-term view that council can help support, understanding, you know, what reserves we should start putting together today to meet the needs identified in the asset management plan 5-6 years down the road.
Yeah, it's very difficult when you do the budgeting to take increase your reserves from today's people, taxpayers, for a future project. And this is what becomes difficult then. I mean, they want to see results from the money that they're actually spending, the taxes. They don't want it stored away somewhere. But there's another township that is really building up the reserves, and they're getting all kinds of complaints from the ratepayers. But why are you doing this? Maybe doing just what you're suggesting, preparing for the future, squirreling away. But they want to see results right now. So it's a fine line.
There's a balance. Everything's a balance, right? And so yeah, you got to find the right. You don't want to have money you don't need just to have it. But you know, if you have a report from staff based off a consultant's report that says, hey, we know we're going to need this.
Oh, yeah.
This is what we need to prepare to do. Otherwise, we'll be in, you know, we can't count on government support, other government levels of support. And so, you know, we don't want to be some municipalities have extreme tax increases, rate increases to support a need that may not have been planned for.
Yeah, it's difficult. And of course, in emergency situations, we use In-Homes Bridge as an example. We look at our equipment situation from a few years back and all the money that had to be spent there to bring everything up to, I guess, a more functioning fleet. And those are things that you can't really prepare for. If you have the reserves, you're right, maybe you can draw on that. But it's something you don't really budget for. These emergency situations, which makes it difficult.
Yeah.
Because you've got something planned 2-3 years down the road, yes, and suddenly your money's gone because you had an emergency. So that's why we do rely on the grants, and fortunately they're fewer and far between now. So we hope that with our asset management plan we can actually apply and look at the long term. Before, when we looked for grants, and we were fortunate to get 2 or 3 within a year or two, they talked about the shovel-ready projects. And I think that's a key, too, that we have to look at. Do we have the money available? If they make that funding out there for people, they don't want to say, well, can you find the money in 2-3 years? They want to say, you got the money now. And so I think that's what we'll be working towards.
Right. Thank you for the discussion. Look forward to more in October.
Thank you. Councilor Craig.
So how do we provide some input or feedback regarding the current asset management plan that was presented today? We had a pretty high-level discussion. You know, just a basic thing, you look at page 95 to 119, and at the top it says Elliott Lake 2025 Asset Management Plan. So, you know, there's numerous items within the document itself that the information is questionable.
Oh, it is. And I didn't want again to put him on the spot of all phases of the document until I understood what instructions he was actually given. And there's even a road mentioned in there. It's our worst condition road, not even in the township. So it's been cutting and pasting, I think, and we just have to, you're right, what do we do with what we've got? And I see it as a push towards getting this software, and without that, you can't do an awful lot with what we have in this report. But as I said, I think this is where we have to bring in the staff and say, is this software we require from them? We have people on staff, and we have consultants now too, who are working in this field. Is it something we can actually prepare, or is it a specialized service that you need to receive information from this particular company? It's not cheap, I don't think, this software. That's what we have to look at. And can we? I mean, we've got by and did fairly well, I think, with asset management plans, as you say, various techniques and through educated staff in the past, knowing our particular area quite well. Do we need to go to another third-party source to actually have input from staff into this source, or is it something we can do in-house? I don't know. We'll have to talk to staff about that, see what the capabilities are. But I think, yes, this is where we need more information that's actually, well, accurate, first of all, and also something that we can actually put into practice, something that's practical, rather than just a general statements that are given here. Councilor Ryan?
I know during the presentation it was discussed that there was a much larger version of the report.
That was interesting to hear, yes.
Yeah. Have you seen it, or do you know any details about it?
Yes, the appendices to all the assets, so it's basically what the software would have in its different scenarios, and it had lists all the assets.
Okay. But how many, given that this is 120 pages, how big
is
that?
It's a lot more because it names every individual asset within the municipality.
Okay, because that's, you know, what personally speaking, I would like to see is that level of detail, and I think even Mr. Rubin suggesting the same kind of thing, is I'd like to see the backup for it. In other words, it's fine to say blah, 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 but again, I think it's a lot of semantics, whereas if we have details and we know which assets we're talking about specifically, that becomes far more useful. And again, do I or does councillors, do councillors need to have access to the, you know, to the software? Maybe, but without knowing what's in the bigger report, maybe it's just simply a case of the bigger report, right? But anyway, I'm not making, it's just a comment anyhow, and without knowing, you know, what it says, I don't want a 1,000-page report, so.
It's just tables.
Yeah.
There's no more
verbiage?
More verbiage, yes. It's
okay.
Just tables.
Like spreadsheets, effectively, whether they are or not. Okay. Because that's what I kept expecting to see when I was going through, and never did. But and again, the Elliott Lake stuff is an embarrassment for them anyhow. But.
So these tables and charts and everything we're going to see in the next short while, does that actually come into, like actually listing all of our roads too?
Yes.
Those kind of details and what shape they're in, when we should be planning on upgrading?
No,
not, it won't include that.
No,
so that's
it's just a list of all of our roads and the condition they're in now. It doesn't really prioritize what needs to be done first.
Okay, so I may or may not read it then, basically.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so what should be going on unfinished business is whether it's going to be direction of council to instruct, say, our road superintendent that we're going to work on our end of listing every road, and whether our council and him go together or we determine at least within the next 5 years, be nice to do 10 years, what roads that we are going to have to put money into. So I really like to see us try to accomplish that within the next year. Well,
and the superintendent
months,
would agree with you. We realized into this process this would be very generalized, and we will all know that we need to have more specific capital plans, so more is to come for sure.
Yeah, because if, especially if, and then we get it in through the software or whatever route we get into our asset management plan, then we're prepared to always, instead of being reactive, be proactive as far as grants, any grants that the government announces, well, we'll give out grants in the year so-and-so for this these kind of projects. Okay, let's see what we're going to do at that point and be proactive. Especially with our roads, it's almost like Hurdle Road was a reactive kind of thing where, ooh, it's in bad shape. How did that all
well,
happen to
us? Maybe somewhat reactive. You look at previous, the 5-year forecast, though, going back 3 years, Hurdle Road's on there.
So it was
done
just,
in sections.
It was just set aside.
Well, no. It's just a question of working out the money you have available and budgeting in it. But it's not something that just suddenly come up and said, we better repair that road.
Right, so
it was in the works.
Yeah. But see, we should have been. Yeah, and then again, looking for improvements, as it's being mentioned, that the document should be more involved in our budget talks. And, you know, our list right there, okay, we can put that off till next year, because that's where it falls. But anyways, I see room for improvement for us if we get at it and especially the roads. That is our major thing, and then we can deal with our other infrastructure, such as buildings and stuff like that. And I know one building has been mentioned in here already, and certain projects, but yeah.
Yeah, it's just a question. We have to decide whether we want the software or not at the expense center. Hmm. So that's what we have to work on, whether we can do it in-house. And it sounds like you want to really get involved as a council, too, so that's good.
Yeah, I would. I think we should have some hands on. It'd be nice just to say, staff, you take care of it. But no, I think with the municipality side, we're going to have to be involved. It's, I think, especially when it comes to roads and, you know, our opinions. You know, if Tom comes back and says, well, that road over there, we'll think about doing it in 4 or 5 years. Well, okay, that's fine. Let them say that, but we should all drive it. And then once this document is all done and it's available to the public, then the public can come forward and say, hey, wait a second, no, we need stuff. So it'll be a document you just continually change and work on, but it's in an organized fashion.
Yeah, I had gone through the previous study and looked at their spreadsheets, and much more practical, as I said, the offer for everybody and even some suggested costs. Obviously, that's all relative, but I think that's important to get this asset management plan to that stage, to bring in the actual things and to see what should be done and when. The roads need study, and that's been mentioned too. And the only caution I give with that one, and I think it's very detailed, it's good. Those people who have gone out with the experience, the knowledge, the engineers, and I think Tatum Engineering did the roads need study a few years back. It's just the priorities that they've set, and this is where, as you say, council has to get involved as well as the different staff, because I'd use one as an example, and nothing against McEwen Road, but that's the number one road to be done as far as the roads need study. And you have to look at, you know, priorities. Mm. As far as condition, yes, maybe it is, but you look at the travel, the use of the road, and how many people live on it, and that sort of thing. So all these things we have to take into account. And the cost, obviously, with the money that we have available. Yeah. But that's the thing you have to be a little careful about with a document like this, too. As it goes out to the public, there are statements made in here that, and I'm sure we'll all question some of the statements that were made, and where did they draw these conclusions from? At one point in there, this is why I'd be quite concerned, it says that, they contradict themselves a couple of times, but it says that all of the playground equipment is obsolete. It's not practical. You shouldn't be using it. And I got thinking, well, yeah, the insurance company would like to hear that. But then you look at another part of the report and says you should be adding to the the infrastructure and putting more in there. So to say it is contradictory at times, and I look at the public works, for instance, it says that two or three times in there it talks about relocation, and we've made it very clear as council that we're not considering relocation of that site. We talked about addition, perhaps, the study that was done and the costs involved. So this is where we have to look at the report and where was this consultant getting the information from? And it's like anything else, I think. You know, you have different lobby groups and even some staff who want things a certain way, so you want to find out who did you consult. And I think that's important for council to know. So the council has to look at it as a whole, too. And that we receive information from staff explaining why perhaps council has the wrong view of the future, that we should be looking at certain areas that we're not really aware of. So we have to rely on staff an awful lot who live it day by day and what should be done. Councilor Keckman?
So, well, how do we, you mentioned the contradictory information, so how do we ensure that the next iteration of the report is a little more accurate or reflective of the situation, because also it mentions regarding the sand dome, it says currently there's no dedicated space for stockpiling seasonal materials such as gravel and winter sand. But then it mentions the sand dome is at 50% of its useful life. So it's, there's numerous areas of that should be reviewed within the report.
Yeah, that's maybe Carly has an answer to this. When we received it for information purposes, when we receive it to actually accept the report, my belief would be that you're accepting everything that's in there. Can you accept something in principle? because there are, as you say, I don't think this is going to be updated to take care of all of our concerns, to be honest. I think they've probably been paid what they were expecting to receive. I don't know the process, whether they've only been paid half of what they were.
I'm not sure. Originally, the township retained Infrastructure Solutions to this asset management report, and we just lost contact with them, to be frank. They weren't responsive to us, and then we find out that we've been handed off to Mr. Bulin's asset management company. So this document's been very hard to get to this point, although staff aren't super happy with the outcome as well, but as long as it does meet the legislation requirements, like, it is fulfilling a need, but at the same point, we do recognize that we need to not stop here and continue to move forward with a more specific plan. As for differences in the document, if council wants to send me an email with some of them they've pointed out, the treasurer and I will review the document again to ensure that we can get it to a point where at least there isn't conflicting information within the document, so it's something that council is able to receive while knowing that this isn't the end.
Yeah, if you could compile suggestions from council and then and see what the process would be involved to make amendments.
Yes, so
Chad
will be more than willing to make amendments to this document.
Yeah.
Depending on how many changes we have, I'm unsure if he's able to get the document ready for October 7th. But I will try to push him as
well. Yeah, I guess the question is more like, say even if we did accept it just for
in principle,
and then say over the course of the next few months we see things we
right.
want to make amendments. What's the process, and is there money involved in those?
And to be honest, I don't know what the money exchange is between Infrastructure Solutions and Chad. Chad's never billed us for anything because he's underneath that contract we have with Infrastructure Solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure how it's working out in the end.
Or I was just going to say, so that's one change that you could make is the Elliott Lake thing.
Yes, and that has been pointed out a few times prior to this, I'll say.
Okay.
Okay, we have resolution 25-413, moved by Councilor Ryland, second by Councilor Haskin. Be resolved, Council of the Corporation Township of McKellar, does hereby give bylaw number 2025-50. In the bylaw to confirm the proceedings of council, the first and second reading, further give a third reading and pass an open council the 16th day of September 2025. Call the question.
Councilor Marlene Hoskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Hickman?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zuler?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. 5 days, no nays. Carried. Resolution 25-414, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar adjourn this meeting at
8:11 p.m.
to meet again on Friday, September the 19th, 2025, for a special public meeting of Council or at the call of the mayor. Call the question. All those in favor? Opposed? Carried.
No.
Oh, sorry.
Council.
I'll for it again.
Yes.
Councilor Mike Hekkonen?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Riley?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zula?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. Meeting is now adjourned.